The Dharma Talk delivered by Venerable Sayadaw U. Silananda at the Thathagata Meditation Center, San Jose, California, August 21, 1998.
Today we come to the very important teaching of the Buddha, the doctrine of Anatta. So the doctrine of Anatta is found only in Buddhism, and so this doctrine of Anatta makes Buddhism unique among religions, because almost all other major religions believe in the opposite of the doctrine of Anatta. And this doctrine of Anatta is a central doctrine in the teachings of the Buddha. And it is important that we understand Anatta first in theory, and then we must understand it through practice of Vipassana meditation. Buddha taught this doctrine of Anatta to his five disciples. That was for the first time. Now, 2 months after his enlightenment, Buddha taught these five disciples his first sermon, the Sermon of the Wheel of the Dharma. And 5 days later, he taught to them the Anatta Lakkhana Sutra, the characteristic of Anatta. And all these five disciples became arahant after listening to this teaching of Anatta. In this Anatta Lakkhana Sutra, Buddha declared that the five aggregates are Anatta. Now, actually, he took the five aggregates one by one and then said that Rupa or corporeality is Anatta, Vedana or feeling is Anatta, Sanya or perception is Anatta, Sankhara or mental formations are Anatta, and Vijnana or consciousness is Anatta. So he taught that all these five aggregates are Anatta. And Anatta means not Atta. The word Anatta is a compound word. It is compounded as na and atta. So na means not, and atta means atta. Now the word atta in Pali has at least two meanings. One is like when we use oneself to refer to oneself or yourself or himself, we use the word atta. So that is a reflexive pronoun. And the other meaning of atta is a permanent entity conceived by most people and in the ancient days to be the core of all beings and so on. So the word Atta has at least two meanings. One is just self, or with a small s, so oneself, himself and so on. And the other is a self or soul or a permanent entity believed to be a truth by many people and during or before the time of the Buddha and during the time or even after the time of the Buddha. This word atta is compounded with the word na, and so first there is na atta, and that na atta is changed into anatta following the Pali grammatical rules. So anatta means not atta. The Pali word anatta, or by the doctrine of anatta, Buddha negated the atta. And what was the atta that Buddha negated? Now, as I said before, in those days, people believe in a soul or a permanent entity, and they think that there is something that is permanent, and that permanent something lives in the bodies. And then when the physical body becomes old and decrepit and dies, it will take another body and so on. And also they believe that that permanent entity is the real one that acts or that does actions, and that entity is the real one that experiences happiness or suffering. And also that permanent entity is the Lord. It has the power to administer the activities of the body and so on. So, and that is what those people believed during that time. And so Buddha came and then declared that the five aggregates are not atta. So five aggregates are not atta, they conceived to be a permanent entity. In the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, Buddha said, corporeality is not atta, and so on. And Buddha analyzed the whole world into the five aggregates. So there is nothing in addition to five aggregates that we can call a world. So when Buddha said these five aggregates are not atta, it amounts to saying that there is no atta at all in the world. So, although Buddha did not say there is no atta, when he said these five aggregates are not atta, it amounts to saying that there is no atta. Now, what it is, that is anatta, that is described as anatta. Now, I just told you that Buddha declared the five aggregates to be not atta. Now, there are three statements which are well known among Buddhists, and these statements are: all conditions, phenomena are impermanent. All conditioned phenomena are suffering. And all things are anatta. So in the first two statements, Buddha said all conditioned phenomena are impermanent and suffering. But in the third, Buddha did not use the word conditioned phenomena, but he used instead the word dhamma. So according to that statement, all dhammas are not atta. And all dhammas mean the five aggregates and nibbana. So we must understand that not only are the five aggregates anatta, but also nibbana is. So sometimes we might think that since nibbana is the object of the world, nibbana must be atta. But here Buddha said all dhammas are not atta, and all dhammas include nibbana. So when we come to anatta, we must understand that all five aggregates and also nibbana are not atta. Now we must understand the third statement, that all dhammas are anatta, correctly in different contexts. When it is put out as a general statement, we must understand all dhammas to mean five aggregates and nibbana. But when it is in the context of vipassana, then all dhammas mean the five aggregates only and not nibbana, because nibbana cannot be taken as an object for vipassana meditation. In the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, Buddha did not say nibbana was anatta. Now, why did Buddha not mention nibbana as anatta in that sutta? I think it is because Buddha wanted to direct the five disciples to the practice of vipassana meditation. So for those who practice vipassana meditation, only the five aggregates can be the object of meditation. So that is probably probably because of this that Buddha did not mention nibbana as anatta in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Now, the meaning of the word anatta. So we know that anatta means not atta. In the commentaries, it is explained as meaning not being the core of anything, or not having a core, or not being susceptible to the exercise of power. So at least we can say there are two meanings or interpretations to understand here. Not atta, and not atta means no core or having no core, and also it means we cannot have power over this. So when Buddha said, say, rupa or corporeality is anatta, he meant that rupa or corporeality is not a core or not substantial, and also he meant that corporeality is the one over which we cannot have our power. Although both interpretations, and that is being no core or having no core, is accepted by our teachers, I think being no core is more appropriate, in my opinion. If we say rupa or corporeality is anatta because it has no core, then we can argue that okay, rupa has no core, but there must be a core somewhere. Only rupa does not possess that core. So that kind of argument can come, and according to the teachings of the Buddha, that argument is not correct. Now, what is it that we call a core here, a substance or essence? So in the commentaries it is stated that something that is wrongly conceived as a self, a permanent entity. So that is what we call core here. And also, as I said before, some permanent entity that abides in the bodies of beings, and that permanent entity lives forever, and when the present body becomes old and it dies, then it transfers itself to another new body, and so on. And also a core means a doer, that is someone who performs the actions. Now, although we think that we are doing the actions, according to that opinion, it is the atta that is doing the actions and not us. So atta is the one that performs the actions, and we are just the instruments. And also, whenever we experience happiness or suffering, it is not us who experience, but the other that experiences, and we are just the instrument in other experiencing happiness or suffering. And also, that other is his own master. So one who is his own master is the most important part of the thing, and so it is called a core. Now, rupa is not a core, means rupa is not any one of these. Rupa is not a self or a soul. Rupa is not the abider, or not the one that lives in the body for all the time. And rupa is not a doer, rupa is not an experiencer, and rupa is not one who which is its own master. When we understand in that way, we are said to understand the another nature of things. Now, how do we know that rupa or corporeality, for example, is not self, not an abider, not a doer, not an experiencer, and not the one who is its own master? Now, the explanation given in the commentaries is, first, we understand that corporeality is impermanent, and so it is suffering. So these two, let us say, we have understood. Now, if corporeality is impermanent and it is suffering, then if it must have no core or no substance in it, because it cannot prevent itself from being impermanent and from being suffering. So this is the argument taught in the commentaries. What is impermanent and suffering cannot even prevent its own impermanence and being suffering. So how could it have the state of a doer or an experiencer and so on? That means something that is impermanent, it cannot change itself into a permanent thing. Something that is suffering, it cannot change itself into happiness. So if it cannot prevent itself from becoming impermanent and suffering, how can it be a master or a doer or an experiencer? So what is impermanent and what is suffering is actually not atta or anatta, in the sense of having no core, or in the sense of being insubstantial. Now this takes us to the another interpretation of the word anatta, that is being susceptible to exercise of power. It simply means it does not follow our wishes. Now all these five aggregates are anatta because of the word said by the Buddha. What is dukkha is anatta. Now this is a criterion Buddha gave us to decide whether something is anatta or not. So if we want to know whether something is anatta or not, we must first know whether it is dukkha or not. And what is the criterion for dukkha? Now Buddha gave us another criterion, and that is what is impermanent is dukkha. So we have two formulas here. What is impermanent is suffering, and what is suffering is not soul or anatta. Then what is the criterion for being anicca, being impermanent? To put it plainly, disappearing after arising. So disappearing after arising is a mark of being impermanent. So whatever arises and disappears is impermanent. And whatever is impermanent is dukkha or suffering. And whatever is dukkha is anatta. Now, we know that rupa or corporeality or feeling or perception and so on, so they arise and disappear, or they disappear after arising. So when we see for ourselves that these arise and disappear, we know that they are impermanent. When we know that they are impermanent, we also know that they are dukkha, they are suffering. And dukkha here means, suffering here means not say physically painful, but here suffering means being oppressed by rise and fall. So the meaning of dukkha is being suppressed by rise and fall. That means if anything has arising and disappearing, if anything arises and disappears, it is called dukkha, suffering, because it is bombarded by or afflicted by rising and disappearing. Now if you see something as impermanent, you know that you cannot turn it into a permanent thing. And if you see something as dukkha, you cannot turn it into sukha. So you cannot exercise any power over them. And so they are not self, or they are anatta. So in the sense that they do not follow your wish, that means they arise and disappear according to their wish and not according to your wish. So mind and matter arise and disappear depending on the conditions. And whether we don't want them to arise or not, when there are conditions, they will arise and they will disappear. So we have no control over their arising and disappearing. That is why the having no control over them, having no exercise of power over them, is said to be a mark of being anatta. So if we want to know whether something is anatta or not, we have to see, or we have to find this mark or this sign, and that is not being susceptible to the exercise of power. So in the commentaries, the characteristic or the mark of anatta is given as insusceptibility to the exercise of power. I think we should also understand that having no core is also a characteristic of anatta. So when we want to know whether something is anatta, we may look for one of these two marks, whether it has a core or it is substantial, and also whether it acts according to our wish or it is out of control by us. Most people are unable to see the anatta nature of things because this anatta nature is concealed by compactness. We take things to be compact, we take things to be substantial, and so we fail to see the anatta nature of things. Yeah, concealed by compactness means concealed by the notion of compactness. Now, we think that we are a compact thing, the matter is compact, and mind is also compact, and so long as we think we are compact, we cannot see the insubstantiality of ourselves. And compactness, or the notion of compactness, conceals the anatta nature because we do not give attention to resolution into elements, breaking down to different elements. So long as we see mind and matter as one compact thing, we will not see its anatta nature. But when we break down the body and mind into elements, that is, elements that compose them, then we will come to see the insubstantiality of things. Now, most people do not even see mind and matter as two separate things. Sometimes we think we are just one. Our mind and body are just one. So long as we do not see the separateness of mind and matter, or in different elements that constitute mind and that constitute matter, so long as we cannot see them, we will not be able to break this notion of compactness. If we cannot break the notion of compactness, we will not see the another nature of things. But when we pay attention to what's happening to us, or what's happening in us, or when we pay attention to the object, at the present moment, we will not fail to see that what we thought to be one compact thing is actually composed of small elements. Now, if we do not practice meditation, we think that this one mind sees, hears, smells, tastes, touches, and thinks. But when you watch your mind, you know that seeing is one, you see with one mind, and you hear with one mind, and so on. So they are separate things. They are separate elements. And also the body, you know, the four elements of earth, water, fire, and air. And so when you are able to see these elements separately, you break the notion of compactness. So when you can break the notion of compactness, you know that what you thought to be substantial is really insubstantial. And so you see that it is anatta. And when you see the elements separately, one distinct from the other, and they arise and disappear depending on the conditions, you come to the realization that there is no exercise of power over them. For example, seeing mind or seeing consciousness. So when there is something to be seen, and when it is brought into the avenue of your eyes, there is the seeing consciousness. So you cannot prevent this seeing consciousness from arising when there are these conditions. However much you don't want this seeing consciousness not to arise, it will arise because there are conditions for it to arise. So there is no exercise of power over the arising of that seeing consciousness. So it arises depending on the conditions, and so long as there are conditions, it will arise. So you have no power over them, and having no power over them is one aspect of being anatta. So we can really see the impermanent nature of things, that is, they are insubstantial, they have no inner core, and also they are not susceptible to exercise of power. Only when we practice vipassana meditation, only when we pay attention to the objects. Without the practice of vipassana meditation, we cannot see the another nature clearly. We may read books, and we may hear or listen to talks, and we think we understand the anatta nature. But that understanding is not our understanding, it is just a borrowed understanding. Only when we practice Vipassana meditation, only when we pay close attention to the objects at the present moment, can we see the another nature of things along with the impermanent nature and suffering nature. So the nature of anatta can be understood only through the practice of Vipassana meditation. Since when we practice Vipassana meditation, we do not see anything that is substantial, anything that we can exercise power over, we come to realization as that there is just the suffering and no person who suffers, because what we call a person is just a combination of the mind and matter, and there is no person over and above the mind and matter. So through practice of Vipassana meditation, we come to see that there is just suffering, there is just arising and disappearing, and nothing that arises and disappears. And also when we look at the activities, we see that there is just the activity and actually no person, say, who performs these activities. And also it is said that the cessation of suffering or nibbana is, but there is no person who experiences nibbana, because there is just mind and matter and no person. And also it is said that there is the path, but nobody who walks on that path. That means the path means of the eight components of the path. And apart from these eight components, we do not see anything to call a path. And so there is just these eight mental states, and no person, nobody who practices these eight mental states, because in the ultimate analysis there are just mind and body, nama and rupa, or mind and matter, and in addition to mind and matter, there is nothing we can call a person or an individual. Seeing the another nature of mind and matter, or the five aggregates, is not the end of the practice of Vipassana. Actually, it is the beginning of Vipassana. So people have to make more effort to go through the higher stages of Vipassana practice until they reach the stage of realizing the Four Noble Truths. But the realization of Four Noble Truths cannot come about without the understanding of the another nature of mind and matter, actually not only another nature but also the impermanent nature and suffering nature of mind and matter, or the five aggregates. So it is very important that when we practice Vipassana meditation, we see for ourselves through our own experience the impermanent nature, the suffering nature, and the another nature of mind and matter, so that we can go on this path, going through the higher stages of Vipassana meditation until we reach our goal. So to recapitulate, Buddha taught that five aggregates are not atta. And since there are only five aggregates in the world, it amounts to saying that there is no atta. And the characteristic of anatta is one of the three general characteristics of all conditioned phenomena. And it is important that yogis see the characteristic of anatta along with the characteristic of impermanent and suffering. And this seeing the three characteristics of all conditioned phenomena will eventually lead yogis to the realization of the truth. Okay.